up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
Tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in. I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky. I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Well, welcome back, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. We got Ryan Kent on the board. We have Greg Pappas over his shoulder, making sure he doesn't mess up, which he won't. S&P futures down 350 and NASDAQ futures down 450. I'm not a big country singer guy, but I was a fan of this Toby Keith guy. He dies at 62. That's not good. Do we have Mr. Kevin?
No.
Don't have me on? Okay. We have Greg. Greg, are you a fan of country music? I'm sorry. Audrey is. She likes both kinds of music, country and western.
Yeah, it's too bad. I mean...
Yeah, man, 62 is
a... Toby Keith.
Yeah.
It's an icon and restaurateur also.
Really?
Well, I think it was franchise, but...
Well, that's all right. You have to do something. Are you going to have the... someday when there's a Pappas chain, what's it going to be? Is it a Pappas chain of... Gyros, flapjacks, steaks, what are you going to do?
How about a sandwich stand?
A sandwich stand?
Yeah.
What kind of sandwiches?
Airports.
What kind of sandwiches?
The classic kind, you know, clubs.
All right. Well,
nothing too complicated.
Like Jimmy John's, you know, type of thing?
Subs are good, too.
Yeah.
Not first on my menu, but definitely... Definitely something to consider.
All right, yesterday we were talking about commodity futures. If it's going to be the craziest year, like some people think it's going to be this year, who knows? Some people, whatever. Some people always think of something, so you're always safe with that statement, aren't you? Some people say that wall's white.
Trump loved that one.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah. They're big. They got a couple of the announcers on CNBC that will never say, "Gee, Greg Pappas thinks." You know, soybeans grew up this year. I've talked to some guys, some pundits, and they think, who are the pundits? Who are these people? You know? The famous guy to challenge that line was your buddy. You don't remember Richard J. Daley, do you? I doubt it.
Not me.
No, where somebody said, Mayor, there's been all these allegations. Show me the alligators. Or something along those lines. Who are these alligators? Anyway, so that's,
I'm here to preserve disorder.
Yes, I'm not here to, what was that? I'm not here to... Create the sword, I'm here to preserve it, or something?
Bingo.
Something like that. Well, you know, he wasn't that great with the language, but he knew how a city was supposed to be run. You know, we haven't had so many kind of sense, have we? This year, I mean, yesterday, I don't know if you spotted it because you watched the market all day. How much narrower can we get? I mean, yesterday, every one of the NVIDIA was up, you know, again. It's pushing $700 now. Today, it's $696, up $3. We had Amazon or Apple made a big comeback on the close I talk to people who are always kind of recruiting clients, you know, for money management stuff. I mean, we don't really recruit. If people want to come here, they come here. And I think a lot of people should be doing that.
Free agents. There's a lot of free agents out there.
Well, you know, you know, the there needs to be a match between the money manager and the client. I mean, what we give the people, Greg, and certainly since you've been here, we have a little more on this on the future side than we have in a while. But we give flexibility. If people want to just bring their stuff here and have some advice to manage it, or to you know, maybe they want to hedge it, maybe they don't, maybe they want to do repair strategies, maybe they want to get longer. You know, we can do all that. It's flexible. If they want to put some of their money in T-bills, we go to the auction for them. If you want us to manage it, we'll manage it. So it's a flexible sort of thing. But some people are just, I mean, you get to talk to everybody. And one of the guys calls me yesterday and he says, guy's got Apple. He's had Apple forever. Now, talk about true believers.
Bingo.
You're never going to... Now, Apple has not come up with anything really crazed in the last several years. Last quarter. And again, I'm not an Apple fan or anything like that, because it's made people wealthy beyond the dreams they ever thought they were. So it's taken a lot of people into and it's helped their wealth tremendously. So you can't... I mean, out of all the countries or companies that are out there, probably more smaller investors are in Apple than any of the other stuff, I think. You know, I mean, without looking at everybody's sheets. So, but
anybody who's got an index is 10% Apple.
Yeah, but the dude is like, man, what are these new virtual eyeglasses or something? Man, they're going to be like the biggest thing ever. Well, Apple's revenue, wasn't the last quarter the first time their revenue's been up in like 7 or 8? The company is no longer, at this point, a growth company. They're probably too big to be a growth company. It doesn't make them bad. If you can maintain at this level, you're doing pretty friggin' good. I mean, it just, you know, what do you expect out of these places? I mean, and can they double? Can they triple?
Cash flow.
Yeah, does their stock price...
Cash flow.
Well, they have cash, sure. And you know, a lot of that's the tax law. Which
they've been buying it back?
Well, I'm going to say that is the, well, whatever, one man's opinion. Pay a friggin' dividend, for God's sake. But dividends are double taxed, and that's why people don't do it. That's why my first change to the tax code would be corporations pay the same as other people, same rate, but if you pay out a dividend, you can deduct it. Because the person getting it, he can pay tax on it. Don't pay twice. That's what causes Warren Buffett, Apple, to get away with massing massive amounts of money. All they do is sit around and try and pick other people off. Okay, that's interesting, but I don't really need...
I don't know if they're picking anybody off. They're just not paying taxes.
Well, but sometimes, I mean, their idea is to find some place when the economy is in a dumper to try and find some place on the cheap. But one of the greatest...
That's everybody, though.
Well, only if you have the money.
Well, again, that's still everybody.
Okay, but if the market were to swoon 50%, there's not a lot of people that are in a buy mode. They're in a save their skin mode, right?
Yeah, the market is the only place where people run away from the sales.
Well, that's right. Yeah. I mean, you buy it because it's going up and you sell it because it's going down, which is sort of you want the opposite side of that trade, right? Yeah. You want the other side of that trade sometimes.
Yeah. Things that make you go.
Yeah. I learned, you know, I never was in this position money-wise, but I learned from one of our first clients, and I've talked about him before. He's a developer out of Arizona, and back in the 87 crash, you know, we did a seminar out in Vegas, right? And one of the speakers was a guy named Alex Jacobson, who was a famous speaker at the Options Institute, really bright guy when it came to options, and Alex would speak all over, and he was in high demand, real nice guy. So he goes out there and he says, how many people bought stock like the morning after the crash? This guy raises his hand. Alex goes, no, you didn't. He goes, well, yeah, I did. No, you didn't. Yeah, I did. Alex, all right, tell me your story. The guy goes, I thought the market was lousy for about a year. I got out. It was all in cash. The crash happened. I watched it. He goes, the day after the Tuesday, after the Monday crash, he goes, I showed up at my brokerage firm nice and early with a couple of dozen donuts and my coffee. He goes, I'm sitting on the porch waiting for these guys, right? He goes, I walk in, the market opens up way down. No, there's not a bid anywhere. And then allegedly Blair Hull, as the story goes, started buying up the...
Buying missiles.
Buying the missiles.
The CBOT floor.
The Amex. The American Stock Exchange, where the thing was actually
I thought the missiles were traded.
The futures may have been here, but the ETF was on the Amex.
Right.
And the rumor had it that he didn't have the money.
Right.
He was buying them anyway.
Right.
So all of a sudden, everybody sees a bid. Well, this guy buys, I don't know how many shares of stock, in about 10 different stocks. And, you know, he had the dough. So he's buying the stuff, and he leaves there at noon. He made an average of like $9 on every stock or something.
Nice.
Yeah. But the story that really...
No, you didn't. Yes, it did.
But the story that really got me was there was a big recession somewhere, you know, God, it's a long time ago, in the early 80s, when Arizona and California were in this, you know, big, you know, I'll say recession / depression. Nothing's being built. So all of a sudden, they start building some stuff in Arizona, a little ahead of California. So his son goes out to a machinery auction, some kind of an auction, where they're doing road graders and those kinds of things. You know, things you use to, like, build golf courses and roads and stuff, hence the name road grader. So he goes out to California, and they're auctioning this stuff off. But the deal is, if you bought the first road grader at whatever the auction price was, you got to buy however many more were in the list at the same price. So the guy gets
there's an incentive.
Yeah. So the dude gets this road grader at, I don't know how much, whatever, you know, a steel price is for a road grader. And, you know, multiple $1,000s, and was able to buy like four more.
So, sweet.
Yeah. So they put him on trucks and drive him back to Arizona. Well, one guy loses the trailer, the thing goes down in like a river. Incredibly enough, the guy's insured, and they get like the full price of the thing.
Wow.
So the other three...
Did you get half off or whatever.
Yeah.
You also get the full value of the one that went off.
So they make
it
back to Arizona just as two guys are starting to build golf courses. So they lease them to the guys more per month than they paid for them.
Ah.
Yeah.
There's cash flow.
So if you make one trade a decade and have just a bunch of money... Only an orangutan would make a bad trade. I mean, you wait till absolutely the bottom of something or the top, and you make the trade. And then when you have to trade every day, then it's different, right? And you know, so it's there are times once a decade where things are just obvious. But either we're down and we've got nobody's got any money to buy it, or we're at the top and everybody's so giddy nobody will sell it. And you know, but it's not just in stocks.
I was reading about what's his name. The guy who's on Shark Tank, Mark Cuban, yesterday, and
he made one good sell.
It was the trade, you know, the decade or whatever for him, and for most people, because he sold within I think 6 weeks of the top.
And Amazon never even used his company.
Of what's it called?
He
got bought by Time Warner,
Or
Yahoo.
Yahoo. Was, yeah.
So he got handed like. Of $2 billion worth of Yahoo stock. He's like, well, I don't want this. So he sold a bunch of calls and used it to buy puts. And I guess a few weeks after that, his whole Yahoo position went from 90 to like 10 or whatever.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And he still had all the puts. So that was a...
I'm surprised if he had...
That was a defensive move that turned into saving his butt.
Now, the only issue there is... Now, okay, as a person somewhat in the industry, what's wrong with this picture?
I don't know. I think it saved him a couple billion dollars. So.
Oh, it probably did, but if you have restricted stock, you can't sell calls against it and be covered. So he either sold call spreads or his stock was not restricted.
Well, it was 3 years out or something. He sold like...
Oh, so he sold them further out than his restriction.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and it, initially, I think he sold like it looked like he was going to be. He was out. I mean, went through him, and people were making fun of him or something. And he said, "You know, okay, that's fine. How much can you have?" And then, sure enough, after that, the market started to tank, and he was the only one with a bunch of puts in that stock, at least.
Well, who was William Shatner hawking for a while?
Priceline?
Yeah. He was doing some of the original Priceline stuff. And then he got paid in stock, and he sold it. He didn't know, his was not restricted. So the company was all pissed off at him selling it, even though it was not restricted. So it was like a couple of years before they brought him back as their spokesman again. Because they're mad he sold a stock. The stock absolutely collapsed, and he's like, I sold mine.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, but they were not happy. I mean, some of these people, they...
Why would you bring him back?
Well, after they finally... Well, because people said, hey, how come he's not on there anymore? He's pretty popular. You know who has a gig sort of like that is UPS.
Who's the UPS rep?
I'm saying United Parcel, the people who work there traditionally, I don't know about the new people now with the new contracts and stuff.
Are they not allowed to sell?
Well, here's the drill. If you, as part of your 401k or whatever, your retirement plan, you get UPS stock. Okay, but it's not, we've done this for a whole bunch of people. It's either you get A shares or B shares and not the stuff that's traded. And if you try and change your stock into the other stuff, they look at you like if you're leaving the place. So nobody does. Nobody will. It's only people who retire then will turn their stock into the stock that you can actually trade and buy puts and sell calls on. So we've had many people like that because UPS, a lot of people in the Chicago area, but we have to go to the company and change the one stock from the other, and they'll sort of grudgingly do it if you're retiring. But if you're still working there, boy, oh boy, you might as well put a, you know, some kind of a target on your chest. I mean, they are not happy with that at all. That you. Now, okay, so what's wrong with that? I was at dinner with Economic Club of Chicago dinner with Jim Tyree, the former head of Mesro, who died young. Jimmy was one of the nicest people and one of the most intelligent men I've ever met. He pretty much saved Marist High School, where I went to school, and said, you guys are going co-ed, and he put up a bunch of money. And now Marist is a co-ed, kind of really terrific high school, which they had trouble for a while because a lot of their area, when it was just all guys, those neighborhoods all, you know, were not producing people to go to Marist. Anyway, but Jimmy was the Economic Club of Chicago one night, and he was my sponsor. So I'm sitting there, it was the day of the 2007, you know, kind of fiasco, where Bear Stearns went under, and I go, Jimmy, you seem a little down in the dumps now. He goes, well, three or four of my best friends work for Bear Stearns. And I go, uh-oh. And it was the day they went under, and he goes, not only did they lose their job, but Bear Stearns was one of these places that a real lot of the stock in the 401k plans for people, you were expected to have Bear Stearns stock. So... And he goes, oh, by the way, they lived in an area where a lot of people from Bear Stearns live, so all the houses are for sale. I mean, so they basically lost their job, their retirement, and a chunk of their house value in the same day. I mean, money-wise, doesn't
concentration risk.
Yeah, you get concentration risk. So, I mean, that's, you know, as much as you want to have, and we had, real quick, we've got to go to break here, we had a couple, this is long ago, I think we went to a... seminar in the Bahamas in like 2001, might have been right after Y2K, right when the crash happened. So this guy and his wife are they're big clients of ours, and they have all this money in this dot bomb company, and they, of course, they're believers, right? They both work there, and they're selling puts to get more stock, because if it goes down, they want more stock. Well, they end up getting divorced, and you know, I guess, since there's no names and it's 20-some years ago, I can talk about it. They end up getting divorced. He shows up at the seminar with the new girlfriend in the front row.
Like, not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one way to do it.
Well, so they split the account in half, right? And so, you know, he and the new girlfriend cannot keep their hands off themselves in the front row. And I'm going, God, is this like high school or what? I mean, I almost said, hey, why don't you two guys get a room? But I didn't. So anyway, he... The stock starts to collapse, right?
Maybe he just really gets turned on by options.
Well, maybe. Yeah, I'm sure that was... I'm glad he wasn't groping me. But the... anyway, the... The account gets split in half, right? Because they get the divorce. The wife listens to my brother and protects it, gets some puts, sells some calls. I'm going to say... I'll pick a number out of the air. They each topped out at about $1.5 million apiece, maybe two. When she left... Say it was two, she left with a check of, she got married again. She left with a check of, you know, $1.8 million or $1.7 million, something like that. I mean, by protecting it, she saved 75 to 90% of the money. The stuff went to zero. I mean, we're not talking, you know, went from 100 to 90, it went from like 100 to zero. And so the guy, guess how much he left with?
Did he tax his hedge?
$75.
75.
I bet the new girlfriend dumped him. Just saying. He didn't want to listen to anything. He was,
ouch.
He was, as more went down, and it's his own account. It's not, we weren't managing it. But he'd say,
the more you go down, the more you're supposed to buy.
Well, the more you're supposed to buy.
It's just one concentrated
mess of God knows what. Yeah. I mean, so the thing went to zero. And I think
S&P would be, you know, oh, I'm all in the S&P. Well, that's not concentration risk because that's 500. But if you've got one individual name or one individual position that's not, you know, an index or something that's somewhat.
Well, that's right.
You know, more than 10 or 20
stocks. Well, I mean, there's reasons.
Concentration is
well, there's reasons why that
stock risk.
I put people in
or single sector risk.
Well, there's a reason why I put people in the big ETFs rather than individual stocks. I don't want to pick the stock that goes to zero because I honestly don't know if somebody's been cooking the books or whatever. They're not going to tell me. So the last thing I want to do is buy a stock for somebody and have the thing go to zero. If you buy what you think is a portfolio that's diversified, you pick 20 stocks for somebody, and three of them are total clunkers, you're still not going to match the market, are you?
Yeah, the clunkers will take over
They take over the portfolio. Yeah. So, plus, I mean, to be mathematically stupid, if you can do that, the S&P is not going to go to zero. If they have to, they'll put PTI in the S&P, right?
Yeah, you're supposed to find the best 500 companies.
But I'm saying, if a stack's a clunker, they pull it out and throw something better in there.
Kick you out. Yeah,
yeah, so it's you know, it could go from, it's 492 today, it could go from 492 to 200 or 150, but I don't think it's going to go below 100, do you? I mean, they'll throw anybody in there if they have to.
Right.
Anyway, S&P futures down 6, NASDAQ futures down 21. Be right back, Mr. Joel Ancannon, I think, if he's there this week. I'm not sure if he is or isn't. We'll find out in a second.
Major highways in Chicago. You got the Edens, Eisenhower, Kennedy, and Stevenson.
I can't hear you, so you're not going out to somebody.
Hello, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Splendid. My name is Ryan. Thanks for having me, Tom. All right. A little bit of traffic in Chicago right now. All is fairly clear on all major highways. You got the Edens, Eisenhower, Kennedy, and Stevenson looking pretty good. Only issue is a minor accident over on I-94 down by the loop. Little bit of a mishap there west at Cannelport. Reported at 6:23 a.m. today, so if you're in the area, kindly be advised not to go around there. In regards to weather, right now we're at a brisk 34 degrees in Chicago with a high of 47 today. In Phoenix, Arizona, it is currently 60 degrees with a high of 62 as well. A little bit of sports news for you today. On Sunday, the Illini basketball team beat the Huskers of Nebraska 87-84. Bit of a nail-biter there.
Overtime.
Yeah. And if I can just drop a little NFL news there, the offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy has been fired after one season with the Commanders. Cliff Kingsbury was officially signed on last Sunday, so he's definitely gone, Tom.
He'll pick up somewhere else. The guy from the Bears just got hired by the Vegas team.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
The guy's, oh, this guy's no good. Well, they think he's good. So it's that's the way that works. Who do you like in the Super Bowl?
Who do I like in the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
49ers. I'm going to have to go with the 49ers, Tom.
Are you a betting man?
Not lately, no. But
I mean, like, not since Sunday or not since, you know, 5 years ago?
Frankly, not since Sunday. You got me there, Tom.
Unbelievable. Do we have Joel?
Yeah, good morning,
Joel. Hey, bud, how are you?
I'm doing okay. Long time, no talk. How's the Windy City?
Windy City is, we're okay. I mean, we had, weather's gotten a little better, which means you get a few more murders, but other than that, we're, did you hear that the city council passed an ordinance calling for a ceasefire in Gaza, right? So I think the story was last night that the, you know, Israeli parliament or something passed an ordinance for a ceasefire in Chicago or something.
Yeah, I think they should be attending to the matters.
Then, one would think. Nobody ever wants to do what they actually are supposed to do, do they?
No, we do, Chief. We do. We talk about the markets. Well, yeah. We talk about sports. We haven't been talking much about sports, though.
What is the... how many people did Harbaugh end up taking with him? Just one?
Yeah, you know what's really interesting? And I don't know if I'm the only one. I don't know if you caught you caught my article. I did analysis on Harbaugh leaving. And, you know, I probably sound a little bit like a crybaby, you know, because, you know, great coach, led us to a national championship. But how significant is it that his son is not going to San Diego with him? What is that? I mean, he's been coaching with them a lot. I know he coached at other places. I know he went to Oregon State. But how significant is that? Is that his son chose to go to Seattle over San Diego? Am I just making a big deal out of something that's not a big deal?
He might want to get out of the learn from somebody else for a while.
Learn from somebody else, but I just don't think it's going to be all peaches and keen. And I'll just recap my article for you. How long did it take Harbaugh to turn Michigan around? How long did it take? What happened in 2020? He was on the ropes. COVID year, we were 2-4. We didn't play Ohio State. As Ryan Day would have said, they would have hung 100 on us. All right. So it was the COVID year, so Michigan really couldn't fire him, right? It was such a chaotic year. Who's going to want to follow Jim Harbaugh at Michigan, right? So it's 6 years. 6 years of losing to Ohio State, okay? Do you think that the Spanos, the cheap Spanos brothers or family, is going to give him 6 years? He signed a 5-year contract. Do you think the NFL players are going to want to pray before games? Do you think they're going to listen to, and I'm not going to swear, but his wacky political and moral beliefs and stuff?
I didn't know he had any of that. I didn't know he had any of that stuff. What are his wacky political and moral beliefs?
Maybe they're not wacky to somebody, okay? Maybe, let me rephrase that, and when you go back, strike that off the record. I would say controversial. Political and religious beliefs. And I'll just leave it at that. Controversy.
Was he left or right?
It depends on the subject. You know?
Oh, all right.
Yeah. You know, and I don't want to get into a political discussion.
They don't care about it. If these people somehow win football games, nobody cares if they're a toe of the hun. You know that.
Yeah, but I think that just the whole mentality of professional football versus college football is like, they don't want to hear it.
Well, except he was pretty successful at San Francisco. Of course, they haven't.
He was. 9 years ago, Chief.
Well, that's true.
If things changed a little bit in the NFL, has the TV money got bigger and bigger? I'm not saying he's not going to be successful. I'm just saying he is not going to have the same amount of latitude that he had at Michigan.
Oh, without a doubt. There's nobody, there's no bigger minor deity on earth than a college head coach. Right?
Yep.
And they've got everybody. When I used to go to, when I was a recent graduate in Notre Dame, we like to play golf, right? So I'd take a few of my buddies, we'd get out in the summertime. You know, I knew everybody. I was an RA. They just let us stay in a dorm, right? And we'd go and we'd play, you know, 18 holes on. We'd run up there on a Friday afternoon. We'd play 18 holes. We played 36 on a Saturday, and we'd come home. You know, and it was charging us a buck and a quarter to play or something. You know, it's a nice little course. It's now half dorms, by the way. But you'd see all the Digger and a couple of the football coaches out riding around in their golf carts. The hardest job on earth is a college basketball coach. I'm going, those guys don't look like they're working too hard to be. I mean, it's the world's greatest job. I mean, you are an absolute deity. But, you know,
especially when you were a player there, a successful player there. You had a successful NFL career. I'm wishing him the best luck. I mean, my Motor City Kitties, I don't know if we must have talked since they lost, right?
We talked.
I hopped on the bandwagon. I got my Lions gear, and as opposed to, like, I told my wife that I'm probably gonna try and accumulate as much Lions gear as Michigan gear. And she goes, "Well, we're not building a new house.
Well, yeah,
we're getting year two new closets." So, that's it. Markets. Talk markets here for a minute. Inside day yesterday, Chief. I know what I know you know what that means. I don't know if all your listeners do, but that's basically the market just digested that big move on Friday. A lot of divergence here in the markets. You got your AI, you got your fat drug stocks just ripping, and then you just got the small caps. I mean, if you're looking for this catch up trade, I think you better switch to mustard, because this IWM chart looks like hell. Just overall, the overall move that it had, the 50% retracement. So, if you're not with the big boys, man,
I'm 100% with you in terms of just all you do is look at the chart and look at the page, and you're not wrong. Now the question comes, and I'll ask you because you've been around a while. When I went back and reviewed the 2000 fiasco, where things went from, what did Cisco go from 65 to 6 or something along those lines? The Qs went, 125 to 20, I think, somewhere in there. I'm not predicting that at all, but the big stocks now, the ones that are somewhat crazed here, when I say crazed, in terms of traditional valuation, doesn't mean that particular company won't grow into it and get even 10 times bigger, but my contention is they all can't because the world isn't big enough. How exactly does an NVIDIA, or how does a Meta is pushing 10 times revenue. Now 10 times revenue, and we're not talking about PE. PE, you can spend a lot of money for research and all that stuff, and your PE can remain high, but doesn't mean the company's not doing well. But revenue is something you can't fake, right? We start getting to 10 times revenue. That was about the ultimate danger sign in 2000, when Cisco's revenue was 6, or 6.25, and the stock was trading 65. When I saw that, I'm going, this thing's too high. Now, did I short it? No. But, it was the first time I even saw something like that. Now, all of a sudden, these guys are getting to the same spot. I mean, NVIDIA seems to have a spot in the world with AI. I still don't know that they're going to double or triple. I don't see how they can. Meta? Really? I mean, these are mature companies now, Joel. I mean, we're not talking about companies that, all of a sudden have a fantastic idea, and of course for the first 5 or 10 years, maybe even 10 years, they're going to be, their PE and their revenue per share or something you can't even look at. They just got an idea and they're going to keep growing. We all know that. But these guys have been around a while to be this high.
Yeah.
Costco is a 48, 50 PE now. It's a retailer. It's just the retailer, I think. I don't. What am I missing here?
The little appetizers and stuff you get to try when you're shopping there.
Oh yeah.
I think we can wrap it up here. It's all about interest rates, right? And the pivot that was like one of the weakest pivots. It was almost like a divot, like when I play golf and I like chunk it. I mean, I don't know what Powell's doing. I don't know what he said on 60 Minutes. I don't know what economic data they're looking at. But there was anticipation of a Fed pivot. You get the speech in what was it, December or January, that he already pivoted, and I'm like, are you kidding me?
It was November.
And then you get November, and then you get all the strong economic data. I mean, I just think, if your investment thesis is that there's going to be 2, 3, 4 rate cuts in this year, I think you need to reevaluate your investment thesis.
Okay, but I got real last question. I know you got a dash. How many people who talk about rates lowering this year and how it's going to be an absolute goose for the market realize that from the day he started raising rates, the market's up from that day, not down?
agree.
That's incredible, isn't it? They went from 0.5% to 5.5%, and the market's up.
It blew me away, and I thought I was looking good on my overall stuff at the end of October. I thought I am the smartest investor in the world, and I'm still happy with I did buy a few things over the year. I bought some banks during the contagion, but I locked up a lot of money, 5, 5.5, 6, whatever they would give me. It's pale in comparison to what the market did, but hey. I figure if they bring down the real rate of inflation, then that number looks any good. So it's just, where are you at in your investment horizon? How much risk do you want to take? Old guys like me and you, we can't be taking inordinate amounts.
Joel,
if
you're not comfortable and you get 5.5 from the Treasury, it's a hell of a lot better than 5 years ago when you had 0 in the Treasury.
You're right.
Take care of yourself, bud. SP futures down 1.25, NASDAQ futures up 7. We're going to go right to Kenny. Is he with us? We don't have Kenny yet? Okay. Well, let's go to a quick break then. S&P futures down $1, NASDAQ futures up 6. Some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com. Stocks.
Hello,
Kenny. We're I guess we're on.
We're
a new guy working on the board. He's doing pretty good. He's working his way through. He'll get there.
He'll be fine.
He'll be fine. SP futures down 2.25. NASDAQ futures up 50 cents.
Yeah.
What do you make of all this? One of my guys called me the other day, and he's trying to track down a client. He's not one of my guys, but he's a friend of mine. And he said one of his clients is long Meta. It has been. The stock was up $60 on, was it Friday's opening? Or was it Thursday's opening? So what do you think the guy does?
What did he do? Did he sell it?
Bought more.
Or he bought more?
Bought more. Made another $20 on the new stuff.
Well, listen, the idea that they became, I think so much of that excitement was around the fact that now they became a dividend payer, which opens up the window to so many more investors now, right? All those dividend funds out there, there's 146 ETF dividend funds that can now all own Meta. And then you get the individuals that maybe are just buy Divvy stocks because that's their strategy and they're older and that's what they do. If they like the name and they never bought it because it never paid a dividend, now it does.
Okay,
right? So I think that created so much of the excitement on Friday.
Question for my much more into the New York people's mentality than me. Does a 50-cent special dividend allow you to do that? They didn't say that it was a regular dividend. They said it was a special dividend, correct?
No. Oh, okay. Well, is that you? So you're saying it's a one-time dividend?
That's what they did not say. This is going to be going. I don't believe. That's what I'm asking you.
I understood it differently. I understood that it is a quarterly dividend. It's a $2 annual dividend. That's how I understood it. Well, and I think that's how the market maybe understood it on Friday because it was just nuts. It was up $80, right? It was up whatever it was up, 20%. I don't think it's a special. I don't think it's a special one time. Now, but now that you say that, I have to go back and read it. But I did not see that.
Well, technically,
and I did not interpret it that way.
Technically, every dividend is not declared till it's declared.
Correct.
So, but I think when they came out, they basically said it was special. But it's so small. If they pull that back, I can't believe they can pull that back. 50 cents.
No, I agree. It may be small in light of everything, but if in fact it is now a regular quarterly dividend, it is going to open up the window to a whole bunch of new dividend ETFs, dividend players, all that stuff. It's going to create that new demand. I do agree that if it's true and it's a quarterly dividend, then I think that's part of the excitement.
If it's $2 a year, what's that, 2.5% on the amount it was up that day?
No, I hear you. I'm not saying it's a tremendous yielding dividend stock, but the fact is, now that it pays a dividend, if those dividend players, if they wanted to own it and they couldn't, now they can.
Boy, if you put your money with a manager and he put you in Meta saying it was now a income stock, would you strangle him or what?
Listen, I hear you. And I never owned Meta. I never bought it. So you could say I missed it, whatever. I just never owned it. I didn't like it. I didn't like Facebook. I didn't like anything of it. So I can't speak to it because I just don't own it. And I would not own it. So
what do you make of some of these stacks? And again, I went through this stuff. I'm just going to talk in generalities here. Some of these stacks have been around like a really long time, like Meta, Nvidia. Now Nvidia's got this AI thing going, these stacks start pushing 10 times revenue, Kenny. I can't do it. I mean, I saw Cisco and Oracle do that in 2000, and I saw what happened. 10 times revenue for a mature company is just too much, in one man's opinion.
I'm not
talking about PE. I'm talking about, I don't see how you, and like a Costco. Like, I love Costco. I've been a member forever. 50 PE, 51 for a retailer. I'm not saying that the Fed's not going to put more money in, that these guys aren't going to make even more next year. They seem to be growing. But, boy, 50's pushing it.
I think 50 is pushing it. But I think under these circumstances, with the Fed still pushing it, I think that's where it gets mispriced. And I do think there'll be a reevaluation now, especially since JJ once again reiterates the fact that, listen, don't hold your breath. Rates aren't going down in March, and they may not even go down in May. And so I think there is a reevaluation that has to happen. Not a disaster, not a crash, but I mean, look, I think we got ahead of our skis, and so therefore you're going to see it churn lower. I would not be surprised. I said it in my note this morning. Look, if we just trade down to the trend line, the 50-day moving average trend line, which is down to 47.34, that's only a 4% move low, well within the trading band, and absolutely nothing to be concerned about. But you needed to go there to shake the branches a little bit to see who falls out and who doesn't.
Well, you're correct on that, I think. Let's put this way. I agree with you. I don't know if that means we're both correct or not, but we're reaching a number, though, that if... Let's take Costco, because I love the place, okay? The stock's trading 7-11. It goes up every friggin' day, Kenny. Every day.
Yeah.
But people
need to eat.
I understand it. But in other words, if I were to say if Costco were to trade at a 35, 32 PE as a retailer, the smart people of the world like Kenny Polcari would still not say, man, 35 PE for Costco, I got to go buy it. And yet 35 PE puts it at like 500, or it's down like $200. I mean, we're such a rarefied spot that, you know, a stock that goes from 300 to 700, all of a sudden somebody goes on TV, they might be ready for a 2%. What makes you think 2% is enough? I mean, if all of a sudden this stuff revalues.
Correct. 2% in that stock is certainly not enough. I mean, look, I'm just looking at the chat right now. It's crazy because in March last year, it was trading at 450. Now it's trading at 711. Right?
Right. Have you ever, I'm sure there have been times that neither one of us could probably remember, but have you, on the top of your head, have you seen any two-day span where bonds have gotten hammered as much as they have in the last 2 days with the market up tremendously?
I haven't. I can't remember that. As a matter of fact, bonds are down about, they were down 2% yesterday.
Yeah.
Yields are up 7% since Friday, right? The two-year went from... from 413 to 435 now, and the 10-year did the same thing from 388 to 415, and likely probably continuing to go higher, I think.
Well, the bonds today are flat. I've got them so far, but
so far, right? But the day is young,
right? But I mean, if these guys start pushing 4.3, I don't see how the market's higher than when it was 3.8 a week ago. Do you?
I agree. I know. There has to be an adjustment in prices, and I'm actually, between you and I, And I keep telling you this, I want to see the market back off because I think it is way ahead of itself, right? I don't want to jump in on the first, you know, as it starts to get weaker and it's down 1 or 2%. I'm not saying that's the move I'm looking for. I'm really looking for something that's 4, 5, or 6%. That's what I think should happen and needs to happen.
Well, on some stocks, I'm going to say it might not be enough, but others, yeah. I mean, what do you – key question. They're all the questions are key. We've had Dan Janinas has been on, and Dan does a lot of fixed income, and he's been in market as long as we have. And he's convinced that if you're going to put money to work now, which, you know, I do every week or two, that you want to zero in on the Russell because they're the ones that have been lagging. And he's also, you know, I still like these metals here because if the Fed's going to start putting money back in the economy again, you know, the metals, I think, are somewhat of a buy, but they've been somewhat disappointing. Is there in the Russell the fact that these guys can't borrow it anywhere near the price of the big guys because the way the Fed's got this all balled up, and some people were buying at 2%, borrowing at 2%, but other people were still paying 10, and people like us are still paying 25 on a credit card. So the Fed, in my mind, even if in general you like their policy, Kenny, I think it sucks so bad because they never push the low rates down to the regular person.
Agreed.
So what I'm saying, is there a reason why, I mean, you know, I'm one of these guys, whenever I buy something, I assume that maybe the guy that he sold it to me might know more that day than me. Now, regular people always think they're the ones that are right, correct?
Right.
Well, is the Russell permanently damaged vis-a-vis the Qs? Are the gold miners, which are trading way cheaper than they traditionally have when gold is at this price, is there something in that industry I'm just not seeing? Are their cost of production so high now that they're going to, if the gold goes up another $200, they're going to go up like $1? I mean, you got to look at the stuff I do anyway and say, yes, the Russell looks like the relative buy here, but what am I missing? What is everybody else? Go ahead. I'm talking too much.
Funny. Yeah, it's funny. We were talking about that Jimmy Urio. You know Jimmy Urio. He's been talking about that. He thinks the Russell is getting to the point now where it's, and I actually think it is too, right? I mean, it's the worst performer so far on the year, down 4.5%.
Yeah, yeah.
Transports are down 1%, but everything else is in the plus column, right?
Well, anything that has the Fab 7 in it is up. Everything that doesn't is down.
Yes, the S&P and the NASDAQ are both up nearly 3.5% and 4%, but the equal weighted S&P is actually down.
Yeah.
You know, less than 1%, but it's down. And all that tells you is once you equal weight that market capitalization index, you realize the real impact that those seven names have on the broader market, right? Because the broader market, the S&P equal weight, when you look at it that way, suggests to you that there is some underlying weakness. And it's just those five or seven names that are, you know, supporting the group as they were last year.
But if somebody wings me a chunk of dough today and wants to be in the indexes, and I put them into my protected program in the spider, and I put 300 grand in the spiders, without even knowing it, I'm putting 150 grand in those stacks. Well, I do know it. I mean, but people think they're diversified, but it's getting less and less.
Agreed. Agreed. That's why, you know, it's important for people to understand what they own and what ETFs they're in and where is the duplication and where is the, you know, I put it in yesterday's note. When you look at something like the XLC, do you realize that Meta and there's two names that make up 40% of that ETF, and I forget what they were, I have to look it up real quick. But the same in the XLK. It's two names that make up 40% of those ETFs.
You know, real quick, Kenny, talk about an old story. When I was CBOE on the board, we the CBOE, tried to looked around for to have our own index, right? I mean, before there were all these little small spiders, and we were going to have an automotive index. And the same thing happened. No matter what you did, General Motors and Ford were like 80% of the index. Even if you had like 50 other companies in there. I mean, there were a couple that were bigger. Chrysler was bigger, and who's the guy to make all the parts? They were somewhat bigger. But by and large, no matter how you did it, you were totally dominated by a couple of companies, and it makes a pretty crummy index.
Right, right. Yeah, but I don't know how you solve for that, because depending on, you know, where we are in history and all that stuff, that it always seems to be that there's you know, a cohort of names that are driving the indexes, right, depending on what's happening in the world.
Well, the same was five stacks in 2000. Can you name them?
Correct.
Can you name them?
Say it again?
Can you name them?
Which one? The five stocks in 2000?
Yeah.
They were. Are you talking about all the dot-com bubble?
Well, the five that were 45% of the Qs, just well, like the five are now.
I'm trying to remember what they were, because remember, I traded in New York. I didn't really bother with NASDAQ, but I would guess that it's probably pets.com has to be one of them.
No, it was Intel, Oracle, Cisco,
okay,
Intel and Microsoft.
Yeah.
And they all totally collapsed.
Yeah, they did all totally collapse, and actually they're all struggling to get back, right?
Yeah, well, I think Microsoft's the only one higher than it was then.
Yeah, Microsoft.
It's hard to tell with Dell was in there too. It's hard to tell with Dell because the guy took it private, then he brought it back public. So I can't figure out what is the price of Dell compared to there. I have no idea. But the other ones are, Intel is almost back to where it was. Cisco's not. Oracle's not.
Yeah, 24 years ago.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a long time.
Yes, it is.
So if you bought it right before the crash, in 5 years from now, it's up a buck. Did you say you're in for the long term and you made a profit? I'm thinking maybe not so much. Kenny,
yeah.
have a great week, buddy. As usual, you're the best. S&P futures down 1.25, NASDAQ futures up 4. Be right back, Professor Helsner.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people?
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tim Howe. We got Ryan on the board. Ryan's not in there. We're using buffers there, but he'll get there. Like I say, S&P futures unchanged now. NASDAQ futures up 11. NASDAQ's got to go up every day. I've got NVIDIA now up. They must have come out with some kind of announcement. They said it flashed up $18, but that had to be a misprint, I'm thinking. Individual stocks in the Dow that are moving. Amgen's up $4. We've got... not much else really moving. We've got McDonald's down $1.67, Merck up $1.20, Microsoft up $1.75. Microsoft goes up every day too. Doesn't make them bad. Just saying that you got to be careful when you look at these things, because it looks like they're going to keep going, but you never really know. Someday they might stop or they might keep going. I guess that's the beauty of the market. Around the rest of the world, we've got in Europe, we've got the DAX up 15. 0.1%, FTSE up 45.6%, and CAC around up 28.4%. So, pretty bullish across the board. Minor, not huge, but a little bit. Nikkei down 193.5%. Hang Seng up 626. Finally, a rally there. That's 4%. 16,136. Shanghai up 87. That's 3%. 27.9. China stocks surge over 3% amid measures to prop up the markets. I'm sure no short selling. You can only buy, can't sell. It's those kinds of things. Yesterday, Dow was down 274, S&P down 15, NASDAQ down 31. Bonds, 10 years down 1 basis point, 4.15. The Bund unchanged, 2.32. Japan unchanged, 0.73. We've got oil up 51 cents, 73.29, so kind of right in the middle of this new range, and I'll say the new range is 71 to 75. Brent up 58 cents, 78 to 57. 78.57. Natural gas down 2 cents, 205. Boy, it's showing a mild winter the rest of the way. RBOB up one penny, 222. We've got gold. It has been sort of languishing in the mid-2000s. There we are, up 20 cents, 2043, languishing in the mid-2000s. Silver down 3 cents, 2239. Copper, 3 cents. Silver's actually down more than the gold, which is it's more of an industrial metal. If you're if you'd like to look at metals and say the manufacturing slowing or speeding up, you probably would look at the silver number and say maybe it's slowing down, but again, that's an imperfect sort of thing. Crypto, up 342, 42,730. And the U.S. dollar, pretty much unchanged. Europe, I'm going to say unchanged. And the British pound, it's down a little bit. The British pound at 125.6. But generally, the dollar's been strong the last couple of weeks. A lot of stuff there, Ryan. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Hey, can you hear me, Tom?
I can now.
Excellent. Yeah, at the moment, nothing much has changed in regards to Chicago traffic. You know, besides a little bit of congestion on the way in from the Eisenhower and a little bit north on the Edens. No major accidents. The accident near the loop has since been cleared up. In terms of weather, things are still fairly nice at a brisk 35 right now.
Foggy as hell.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, no, don't...
have your fog lights on, if you have them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I can even see out the window right now. Like, I can see maybe... I'd say about 200 feet in front of me. Just mind your visibility if you're coming on in. In regards to the Chicago weather, like I said, yeah, you know, just be careful. Just be careful. I think
not,
that's always
it's not like I'll turn back if I were you. No, we're not there yet. No, okay.
Yeah, I mean, we've come this far. We'll be okay.
There you go. Super Bowl, are you? And you have yet to say who your team is. You said San Francisco, but are you really betting on them? You like the 2 points?
Honestly, I do. If I'm being honest,
I'm
a little more of a casual fan at this point. You know, I try to root for my Bears. Keyword try. I think we've all been there.
Let's not even go there.
Yeah.
The whole reason why they lost is because the offensive coordinator, somebody else was happy to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
So, do we have the professor?
Hey, what's up, Tom?
How are you, bud?
Oh, man, I was up till 3 in the morning, not doing anything but programming these new models I'm creating for my labor economics class.
You weren't hacking into anything for anybody like
that? No, just drinking milk and Diet Dr. Pepper.
God. I'm going to say...
Not mixed together.
I would hope not. I'm not a Dr. Pepper. Either are or you aren't.
Well, you know, in the South, I think you drink warm Dr. Pepper for breakfast. If I'm wrong,
Texas. Yeah. Well, you know, you're from the South... It's a lot of things are different.
Yeah, it took me a while to get used to it in North Carolina, and you know, funny thing is, my wife the other day reminded me of something I said. I'm kind of blunt sometimes, and I don't even realize I'm doing it. But one of our friends was, you know, trying to just, you know, have conversation with me, and she goes, "How do you like living in the South?" And I basically said, "Well, North Carolina is not really the South. The South is, you know, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Georgia, yeah, that's really the South. North Carolina is kind of like a border area." And the woman was like, "Well, you know, I don't really care if North Carolina is in the South or not." But when I was there, I think you get in the South when you get outside the cities. When you get into the rural communities, that's when you really dip into the South, and life just slows down, and the gravy gets thick on the biscuits.
Yeah, it's I haven't been down there much. I can't say as I'm really anxious.
I enjoy it. I love being in Greensboro. When I first moved there, I watch TV, you know, the news, and yeah, I'm a white guy from the West, and I'm moving into the South, and I was a little worried about black-white relationships in North Carolina, you know, because it's, you know, 20, 30 years post civil rights, you know, protests and whatnot. I go down there, and people call me Mr. Hal. I would go to a Costco, and it was kind of a huggy culture. And I'm getting a membership at Costco, and the black woman behind the desk is, you know, she squeezed my hand and called me honey, and just found people to be really friendly. And, you know, what I found really interesting about the people in North Carolina is, when we'd interview a faculty member, a potential faculty member, I'd go over and pick him up at the hotel. And while I was waiting for the guy to come down, from, you know, the person, the woman or the male, coming down the elevator, I'd just watch people that were in their 60s and 70s and 80s that were working, maybe not 80s, but there were a lot of people in their 60s and 70s working, you know, housekeeping, whatnot. And I just want to see how they interact with each other. And every time I observe that, and just kind of curious, I'd always see, you know, an older white guy, older black man, older white guy, older black woman, or vice versa. They all seem to be very friendly and huggy. So it just got me thinking that what we saw on the TV was government forcing this racism on people. I think most people probably were pebbled in a shoe. They kind of went along with it, you know, like most tyrants, they go along with it. But for most people, it just seemed to me that no matter where I went, downtown Greensboro, rural community, I just saw older people of different races, of different sexes, friendly. And I couldn't explain it. I mean, so I think a lot of people just kind of went along with it. And so a little revolution is really important every once in a while, a little revolution.
Well, I think it's
broke those tyrants.
I think it was a, it's you know, it's more of a slower lifestyle. I don't know, I'm not so sure a lot of that is in the, it's in the South. It's just out of the big city. I mean,
yeah, life is a lot slower in rural communities, and that's why I don't live in a rural community. I went nuts in places like Bruno, Idaho. You know, population 100. There's more people in my kid's school right now than lived in Bruno, Idaho. Bruno is spelled with an E A U instead of an O. Bruno.
Well, I mean, my girlfriend gets around when she does. She's on the show, Audrey. I mean, she, because of real estate, I mean, she works, you know, many, many days in a row when the clients are needing to look at places and so forth in the summer. I mean, she never has a day off, a weekend or anything. And but then there's times of the year where there's, you know, nobody's looking for a house in January all that much. I mean, there's a few people that are, but I mean, she can knock out, you know, 4 or 5 days, and she and a couple of pals will go some places. But even like they went to Door County last summer. It's usually go to, you know, Manitowoc and Two Rivers. They're not south, obviously, they're north. She goes, there's no road rage. There's nobody honking at everybody. There's nobody flipping anybody off. Yeah. I mean you can't make it, I don't know how many miles here in Chicago before you run into a total moron. You know, yeah. Somebody will pass you through an intersection, or I mean, if they think they're 1 second late, they're entitled to. I had one the other guy the other night pass me over railroad tracks, and I was going over the limit.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, people are just nuts, and they're all stressed out, and I mean, you don't get that even in a little 50 miles west of Chicago, you don't get that.
Well, I think in a city where you got traffic and whatnot, you know, commutes are longer, you know, in Idaho, 30 miles is 30 minutes or less.
Yeah.
In New York, 30 miles is like 2 hours sometimes. So I think when you add that up, the cumulative effect of that is you spend a lot of time in your car or on the commute, and it just, it's not pleasant. And so I think what people can do in that regard is be like my wife. Everywhere she goes, she's never in a hurry because she's listening to her 1,000th audiobook on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she listens to books, and when she's at red lights, she'll read along with the book, or when she's waiting for me or waiting for the kids,
she tunes the world out.
Yeah, and she goes into that mode, and I'm trying to do that as well. I do it with podcasts and old videos of Murray Rothbard. I love watching listening to the old Murray Rothbard videos from the 70s and 80s.
Well, it's I mean,
even Milton Friedman. I love listening to Milton Friedman because he's good at deflecting questions.
You got to be careful asking him a question.
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
Because if the answer to the question is more complicated, he doesn't simple it down. And if
he was really good with loaded questions. I noticed that he was really good with loaded questions. Right, a loaded question like, all right, when did you stop beating your wife? Right, have you stopped beating your wife? Well, there's no way to answer that question. Right, you can't answer yes or no in a 15-minute soundbite. But he was really good at answering those kind of questions.
Well, in the class I had him for was the theory of price. Talk about mathematics, more graphs, more slopes. But if somebody was stupid enough to ask him if he had like some curve up there, whatever the formula for the curve was, And the guy'd say, "All right, so what about, what is, I'm not sure I get that." Well, he'd say, "Well, clearly it's because of this." And he'd put four more formulas up there instead of tell you this is, here's the layman's version of what this one formula, nobody knows the hell it is. He'll put four more up there as a way to explain the first one.
Well, you know, that's funny because I think him and I would get along really well, because one of the questions I was modeling last night, coding up, is a hedonic wage function. And a hedonic wage function is just simply, you have the risk of injury on the x-axis and you have the wages on the y-axis. And what I needed to do is I needed to fit a parabola, four parabolas, one opening up above, two opening up above it, two opening up below it and above it. So I had four parabolas, two opening up and two opening down. And they all had to intersect, they had to be tangent to this line. So I needed them to be tangent to an upward sloping line with a given points, X and Y, two points. So I had to calculate the slope of that line. So I had that line, I had the four parabolas, five equations, plus the derivatives of those four parabolas. So I had a nine equation system, and I needed to be in a way that a pair of parabolas were tangent to the hedonic wage.
What percentage of the listeners even know what a parabola is? I'm not so sure I remember.
But man, I'll tell you, I was coding it up. I was creating the algorithm on a thing called Desmos.com, and then I coded it in my open math, and man, it came out beautiful. And that's sometimes why I get carried away and I get stuck working on these kinds of things until 3 o'clock in the morning.
I remember the name parabola, but I couldn't really locate one for you. But now, what do you do about stuff like workman's comp?
Oh, well, you can model workman's comp in labor economics. It depends on how the workman's comp is modeled. It can be modeled as, you know, a lump sum payment each month, or it can be modeled as a negative tax, right?
Well, probably
modeled as a lump sum payment each month.
All right, I'm going to ask a kind of a real nasty question from back in the day. If you have a project, say the Golden Gate Bridge, what the hell is the other one? Hoover Dam, where there were people that went every morning, and if somebody got hurt, they got hired. The person who got hurt, I don't know that they ever did much for that person.
Probably not. They probably end up in the concrete, right?
Well, I don't know about that, but
I've heard there are dead bodies in that concrete. That, you know, that's,
they allege that there are not. There were 90 some people died during the construction, but they claim that all the bodies were accounted for.
Yeah.
Really?
Okay. All right. That's good. That's good.
The one that there's not even close is the people coming this way. For those that don't necessarily have this history. When the Transcontinental Railroad was built, meaning from Council Bluffs, Iowa, actually, from across the river, from Omaha to Sacramento, which only took
through Promontory Point, Utah.
It doesn't go through there anymore, but you can still go see the spot. I'm fascinated by all that stuff. Being a railroad guy that I am, going out there, it was pretty much done by Irish people. Now, you know, there were others coming way.
The railroad from Sacramento to Golden Spike, Utah, I think that was mostly Chinese workers.
It was all mostly Chinese workers.
Yeah.
And now, basically, nobody cared about them.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that if you, and this is going to sound awful, but you probably could make the economic argument that people treated a slave a lot better than they did those people. I mean, they obviously didn't own them, so there wasn't that, you know, horrible part of slavery. But if they had an avalanche and took 25 people out on one of those mountains where they're digging a tunnel, maybe they found the bodies in the spring. Maybe they didn't. They didn't care.
Well, I think that's because of the superabundance in that labor from China. People were fleeing China.
Well, plus, nobody thought. I mean, at the time, nobody thought they were. I want to say they weren't real people, but you know the prejudice was dramatic.
Well, you look at the cigar box industry, cigars in San Francisco. The white only labor unions were you just look at the cigar boxes and the racism on the cigar boxes, where you have white unionized cigar makers, males, chasing down black cigar makers or Chinese cigar makers. It's really racist imagery.
Oh yeah, sure it is. Yeah. I mean, man's inhumanity to man is legendary. I mean, for how many centuries did the British have white slaves?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you get advantage on somebody, you took it.
The Normans that came in and conquered England in the 1000 AD ish area.
Yeah.
Era, they conquered the English, and they became the nobles in England. And then their first foray into colonialism is they went up and enslaved basically the Irish.
Yeah.
And plantation comes from the fact that the English thought the Irish were uncouth and uncivilized, and they needed to plant civilized gentlemen and gentlewomen on Ireland. They needed to plant them. So that's where the word plantation comes from.
They might not have been all that wrong about the Irish. I'm half, you know.
I'm Scottish. The Snars, they come from Germany. I think the name was Snaer. They went to the Shetland Islands, and they end up in Scotland, in the Highland Scotland. I think in Scotland. Then we ended up in Yorkshire, and then they migrated in the Mormon migrations from York County, I think it is, into Utah in the 1800s. So that's where the Snars.
You remember the scene in The Quiet Man when he says, "I knew great grandpa Thornton. He was a great man. He ended up in a penal colony in Australia or something." But I guess what I'm saying is the when you didn't care about any of those people. I mean, in my family, the person I'm named after, the original Thomas Howe, I think was married to my grandmother. Talk about a weird situation. And he croaked in a electrical thing in some place he was working back in the yards. I don't think she ever got a dime for that. I mean, she sure didn't show.
Yeah.
Maybe something. But there surely was no lifetime pension or anything like that she was getting from the guy.
Yeah. Anytime there's a superabundance of a certain kind of labor, it's you can make it really inexpensive. I think that's the reason why these companies, these railroads or whatever, were really open to migration, because you get a flood of a superabundance of a certain kind of labor. You don't have to pay them a compensating wage differential.
Oh yeah, you don't. You didn't.
It's a buyer's market, right? It's a buyer's market for that labor, so you can treat them however poorly you want.
Well, they. There was an avalanche. We're missing 30 guys. Well, there's 30 more guys who want to work. Get them over here.
Yeah.
There's
an episode of Little House on the Prairie where Pa Ingalls. I love Pa Ingalls, man. He goes walking 120 miles or 200 miles or whatever. Ends up working on a railroad, right? And he ends up. He needs the money bad. He's desperate. What does he do? He doesn't know how to plant dynamite in the rock, but he volunteers for it, right? And he has to trust the guy slinging that sledgehammer, right? Because they have to drill the holes with sledgehammers. And basically...
What year was this supposed to be?
1800s.
I'm going to say that movie was wrong, because I don't think... When was dynamite invented? It was after that.
Well, the Chinese had black powder for it.
Well, black powder. I was going to say, we're going to talk markets here in a minute, but the difference, if you see how the building of Hoover Dam, the first thing they did was have to drill tunnels through the mountains to send the river while they were building the dam.
Yeah.
Well, they had this big steam powered drill fixture that was, I'm going to say, tunnels, I think, are, well, hell, I'm getting, my memory's fab. I say the tunnels are 13 feet diameter, something like that. Well,
like the aqueducts that feed the New York City.
Although that was a little bit different, because that was mud; it wasn't rock. But the aqueducts, you're right. I'm talking about the tunnels. But they had this big fixture that had probably 100 drills on it, maybe. And the thing would go up there, and they'd power it by steam, and it would drill, 100 holes, essentially the length of a stick of dynamite. And then they would put the 50, 60, 100 sticks of dynamite, however they were in there, they'd all get the hell out of there, the thing would blow, and they'd get 3 feet, like every time, 3 or 4 feet of rock. And then you'd slag the rock out of there, and then you'd do it again. Well, when these guys, mostly Asian, Chinese, were coming this way for the railroads, it was before dynamite. So they would drill all these holes by hand and stuff them with black powder and light some kind of a half-assed fuse.
Oh, wow.
And it would blow. And sometimes, if you didn't do it just right, or the rack happened to be, you know, somewhat stronger, you just blew it. It's the thing's still sitting there. You didn't get a pebble. So they did that all by hand, the drilling and everything, using black powder, because dynamite was not invented yet. And then they tried, at one point, to use nitro. And that had I don't know how many people died before they said, okay, we can't use nitro, we got to go back to the black powder. But busting up a tunnel before you had dynamite was about as tough as it got.
Oh, I know, yeah. Well, there's a movie with Christian Bale and the guy that played in Gladiator, Russell Crowe, called 310 to Yuma. It's kind of a remake of the one back in the 60s. But, yeah, they show Chinese immigrants working on the railroad. They're drilling a hole through the mountain.
Well, they went from there up to went to Canada because there's railroads up there. And Neil, who hired a lot of them? Have you ever been on a wine tour in Napa?
No, I haven't. My wife has before I met her.
Yeah. If you go to the Behringer place, which is still a real big winery, and I'm sure they have other names other than theirs, but they have holes basically busted into the mountain where they store all the wine. It's always 55 degrees, right, or whatever, 54 underground.
Oh, that's cool, yeah.
But those were dug by the Chinese after the railroad was done, and they were looking for a job. They said, hey, come on, we've been digging some mountains there, and they did.
Yeah. Well, hey, you got to do what you can to preserve that wine, right?
Yeah, but here's talk about the Irish.
Before refrigeration.
The Irish and a little anecdote here. The Irish and the Chinese. The Chinese insisted on eating vegetables and stuff. They didn't drink. And on Sunday, their day off, they would do some kind of opiate, you know, because I'm sure they were all beat up from the week. They would do some kind of opiates on Sunday. But they never were drunk. But the Irish, they didn't want any vegetables, right? And I don't know what they ate, but they drank the whole time. And when they had these cars that moved, you know, and they did a section of rail, like 10, 15 miles, they'd move all their stuff, right? Well, on the flat cars were like three saloons and three whorehouses that you could put on the flat car, and then all of a sudden you move, and then you had your new town with three saloons and three...
Mobile town.
And, you know, these guys would sleep in a boxcar, basically, with like 30 guys in the boxcar. Nobody ever took a bath, where the Chinese like bathed every other day. I mean, it's like, you read this stuff and you go, those are my guys? I'm Irish? Like, wow. But,
well, there's that movie with Tom Cruise, Far and Away, where it shows him, an Irish immigrant, on one of those trains. It's a really good movie.
Yeah, it was, well, the guys here...
And of course, there's Blazing Saddles, right?
Yeah. Well, the guys here dug, the Irish pretty much dug the I&M Canal back in the They still, if people are digging around there, they still find glass pints of some, you know, whiskey that hasn't been around for 200 years.
I paid you boys a little, to lay a little track, not dance around.
Well, I mean, if you're going to do that kind of work, and if you, I mean, you don't want to be sober. I mean, I don't think.
Yeah. I don't think so.
So, Hal, how much we've asked this question, I've asked it of other people, and you're working till three doing. How high can of some percentage of the market go while the rest doesn't follow? I mean, what? I guess when we come back from break, I'm going to ask you. This happened in the 20s,
yeah.
And all of a sudden, one day, everything blew. Now, I'm not saying it's the same situation or anything like that. It's never the same. But the fact is, there was this massive split in society between the haves and the have-nots, in the 20s. I mean, the entire agrarian part of the population, which was, I'm going to say over 50% at the time, had been in a 10-year recession/depression.
Yeah.
And in a lot of cities, you know, there were the haves and the have-nots there. And, of course, you had people that could afford it. I had no idea that a Duesenberg was like $11,000 in the 20s. God, how much money was that in the 20s?
Yeah.
I mean, I can't even... I mean, the car to this day would be... I mean,
the CPI was about 14 back then. And the CPI is, what, about 300 today?
Yeah. I mean, it was... I know a house was like $1,500 maybe. So a car was like 10 times more than a house.
Wow, yeah.
But I mean, not a car, a Duesenberg. I mean, your Model A was probably, what, $150, $300, something like that.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, you had people that had enormous amounts of wealth. And the whole idea that the shoeshine boy was in the market. Yeah, the shoeshine boy in Grand Central, not anywhere else in the country. Because what I've read is only 7% of the people in the country owned any stock at all. I mean, it's got to be way higher than that now with 401ks and stuff and IRAs. I don't know what the number is. I should know, but it's not. What do you think it is now? 45%? It's got to.
Yeah, it's probably roughly 50. I'd say it's roughly 50.
Yeah, somewhere. So it's
probably varies.
You know, so nothing's the same, but I mean, we seem to be able to just get more. I mean, is this COVID, in my opinion, has caused a bigger split between the haves and the have-nots than anything I've ever seen.
Yeah, all you have to do is look at the checking account deposits and the and cash held by the top 1%, and nearly all of that COVID stimulus went to them.
Oh yeah,
it's just amazing. You know, you got checking accounts that going from like 7,000 to 400,000 in a matter of two
years. Well, I'm going to ask you to referee a not necessarily an argument, but a difference of opinion between my brother and I. Dan, the president of PTI Securities, great job with people that are more self-directed than the people I deal with. Anyway, S&P futures up 375, NASDAQ futures up 30. We can't be down today. We can't be down. Just can't be down anymore. We got NVIDIA went through 700. Now it's 699.44. I'm going to say, I'll bet you a quarter we've closed over 700. Just have to. In a couple weeks now, it'll be 800. Right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again. How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise, with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities.
For many, back up to levels where that IRA is showing a few signs of health. Also, those investments in fixed income, especially long-term, have shown solid profits. Is it for sure this time? Just don't pay any attention. Every month, the wealth just piles in? Let's hope so. It sure has been a while since things have been that easy. In fact, the first decade of the new century has shown minimal stock returns in the major market averages, with horror stories galore in individual and considered high-end stocks. So what is it this time? Don't pay attention and just make money? Or a prelude to another broken dream like 2001 and 2008? I don't know, but I would rather have things just be good for a long while. A lot easier on all of us. However, at PTI, we do not leave our clients' investment future to chance. We will make sure to lock in some of that recent run-up. No 2000 or 2008 disasters for PTI clients. Whether it's in hedging individual stock positions, for those with legacy stock positions, protecting fixed income positions, our signature 12-year Protect Index program, or our new hedged high dividend program, we can tailor your risk-reward curve to your individual needs. I'll be blunt. Not very many places tailor your investment portfolio to you. Don't be the uncomfortable and unprotected square peg in the round hole. Find all about the Chief and the rest of the talented group at PTI at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yes, that'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave, you know it's a lie. Cause that'll be the day when I die. Well, you give me all your love and your love.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Ryan on the board. S&P futures up 450. NASDAQ futures up 34. He managed to resurrect about it. 15-year-old commercial, but it wasn't bad. It sounded better back then. Al, who's this on the song?
Oh, that's a little before my time. If you played some Charlie Pride or Johnny Cash, I'd know. My mom listened to that.
How could you not? How could you sound like Grant Gronkowski there? Didn't know who Journey was on the national TV.
Well, Journey's awesome, and Metallica, you know, and CCR, and Janis Joplin. I love that. But the only thing I remember when I was a kid was my mom playing Charlie Pride and Johnny Cash. That's all I remember when I was a kid.
I'll give you a hint. A guy wrote a song about it, The Day the Music Died.
I don't know, man. I just was not into pop music.
It's Buddy Holly, for God's sake. Okay. Talk about a classic guy. I mean, geez.
Well, hey, he had great-looking glasses.
He had great-looking glasses. And
he was the... I read that he was the guy... I know more about his history than I know about his music, but he was the guy that started the five-piece band. You know, the bass guitar, the rhythm, the lead.
He was a huge ahead of his time.
Yeah, and his career got cut short by that crash.
Yeah, and I told you about the autopsy they did recently on one of the people in the crash.
Mm.
One of the guys that was thrown far away from the plane was the Big Bopper. Is that Richie? Mm. Is that Richie Valens? The Big Bopper.
Richie Valens, yeah. A good movie with in the 80s about him.
Well, evidently, talking about the weird stuff we talk about on the show, because then you're going to tell us whether the market's going up or down. The years after, or months after they had kind of cleaned up the crash site and was no longer a, you know, whatever it was, a crash site, the farmer was retaking his field to farm it. You know, they probably had a couple acre for crash site, or more than that, depending on how much the thing blew apart. He finds a gun there, and the gun had one of the chambers was, you know, empty. So the gun had. So for years and years, there's this backseated rumors about, did somebody really shoot the pilot, or did somebody shoot somebody, and that's why the plane went down and all this stuff. So then the rumor was, since Richie Valens, the Big Bopper, was further away from the plane, that he had actually, that somehow with the gun thing, he had survived the crash and was trying to get away. It was some story. And of course, this is all, you know, there's a million rumors on everything, right? So he's buried someplace, and I think maybe Texas, but I'm not positive. And they decide they're going to move the body. And to get rid of all the rumors, his son agrees to do an autopsy.
Hmm.
And so now the guy who's some genius autopsy dude, whatever you call those guys, forensic, what do you call a... What was Quincy? You call him a forensic? Yeah, whatever. So, or Ducky on NCIS. He doesn't want to open the body up and start tearing it apart with the kid's son watching, basically.
Yeah.
So he has this way he does it where they take, like, you know, a gazillion, that's kind of a lot, x-rays from every angle they possibly can. And they, of the entire body. So they do this and they find no evidence of a bullet.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What they found... The idea that what did he survive the crash? I think they identified something like 200 and some broken bones.
Wow!
From the crash, and the guy goes, "No way he survived. He just got tossed in the plane."
Yeah.
By the hit, and anyway, a couple of rumors got debunked, shall we say?
Yeah. Well, there could be a lot of reasons why there's a missing chamber in a gun. I mean, maybe the guy, you know, a month earlier had discharged his weapon, maybe doing a...
Well, if you have a... I don't know how much you read about old guns, yeah, but if you're a cowboy or somebody who's actually... If you have one of those old single-action jobs, like a Colt Army or something, you never had one on the top, because you could conceivably, if your horse did something or you jumped up and down the wrong way, you could fire that thing and hit yourself in the leg or the foot.
It's basically safety before there was a safety.
Yeah, you didn't have one on the top.
They easily explained it.
Yeah. So, but anyway, and see what you started by playing that song, right? but now, this, what we're seeing with the markets here, it's today's world, Hal. So I'm not going to say it's not normal, but we've seen a big run up in interest rates in 2 days, and we've seen the market go up with it. I mean, yesterday the market wasn't up, but it wasn't down very much either, considering the bonds were down 2%. It's a huge move. I mean, the difference in, if you were to use a strict capital pricing model, and you were going to price the earnings, assuming some of these companies have earnings out for the next 15 years, on one day you price it at 3.8, and the next day you price it essentially at 4.15, you will find a tremendous difference in the price of that stock vis-a-vis their earnings because of the interest factor. And, you know, I would say the stock would be down 1 or 2% at least just on the valuation, and yet they're up. Now, that can happen in a short term and so forth. It's just sort of odd. I mean, it's not something you would normally expect to have happen. Now, you wouldn't expect that some parts of the market, and we have reason why I say this, Al, it's not just because it's, you know, I'm pulling it out of my ass. I mean, we have all kinds of clients with all kinds of different goals. And there are people that this year and maybe even last year hunkered down into the stocks that pay the best dividends, because some of those stocks rates are pretty high. I mean, because you're higher compared to a few years ago. The stocks are down a little bit, and companies have been increasing dividends. Yet, those stocks cannot get out of their own way. Absolutely cannot get out of their own way. They're probably down on the year, which, by the way, they should be with interest rates up. They're down on the year, and yet 5, 6, 7 stocks that are now catch everybody's eye go up every single day. I mean, I'm not saying that any one of them isn't going to be the world's biggest stock for the next 20 years. It's hard for 10 of them to be like that because the economy has to grow so fast that there's no way you can. I mean, how does Meta triple at this size, you know, type of thing? How does Costco double at this size? I mean, there's a lot of Costcos around, but I don't see them doubling anytime soon. They've been around a long time. I mean, how do you put all these formulas together, maybe in a math formula that only you could do? How do you make head or tail out of this? You know, I mean, so much of it's politics, so much of it's Fed, so much of it's everything. I mean, how do you even advise somebody from a purely economic side who's trying to invest today? Do you look at the IWM and say, it's a relative steal? Or do you say, hey, the way policy's going, there aren't going to be any small companies. What are you buying that crap for? I mean, I honestly don't know the answer, so you tell me.
Well, I think what government does is it likes, you know, 4 or 5 really large companies, because those 4 or 5 companies are easier to manage than, you know, you can't manage a bunch of chickens. Ask Rocky Balboa, right?
Yeah.
So they need 4 or 5 big behemoths. They have, the Fed is printing money like crazy. I mean, they're back at it. M2 is starting to accelerate.
Yep.
The great inflation is going to return. And inflation has nothing to do with, you know, greedflation. Inflation is it price inflation, asset inflation, not caused by, you know, growth, real growth. All that is a monetary story.
Pal, how do people who don't, never taken, you know, monetary theory like I have, and you obviously teach it, how do we get some percentage of the population to realize it's not asset price inflation, it's dollar devaluation?
You're exactly right. That's what it is. The Fed is creating money. And here's the thing that is scary. It wasn't for interest on reserves being rolled out in 2008 to, you know, to as part of the toolkit to put a price floor on mortgage-backed securities when the, you know, the Fed had to buy all those securities and price floor it. It wasn't for interest on reserves. All that money that's in the Federal Reserve System now, in the form of a reserve, would be out of the banking system. And that's why the Fed has to keep interest rates high, right? So if it wasn't for interest on reserves acting as a dam, holding back all the spring melt that the Fed has printed into existence, we'd have an even worse inflation problem. So interest rates aren't going down anytime soon, I don't think. And you look at M2 and it's heading straight up.
Well, I think they might drop the Fed funds rate from 5.5 to 4.25 in the next.
They might go down a little bit, but I think what's going to happen is you're going to get a lot of leakage from that system, and that's why the repo market is fluctuating so much right now, because they're at that point where if they lower interest rates anymore, you know, people are going to take their money out of the Federal Reserve System and put it in something else, right, and get a better return. So we're talking about bankers, right?
Well, we also are talking a little bit about near term versus 10-year. I don't see, if inflation comes back, they got away with it once, inflation is going to be 3 or 4%. your 10-year rate going forward, somebody somewhere is going to figure out that they should get paid for somebody else using their money, despite the fact the big banks don't want you to. They like to use your money for free. I could see, I really could see, now of course this won't happen, the short-term rate back to 4.25 and the 10-year rate being 6.
Yeah.
I mean, that to me is more normal.
I can see that. That would be actually, I think, a normal interest rate. Right.
That's the way that would be normal. Especially if you're bumping along at a 3.5% inflation, why the hell should I give my money to somebody at 4? I'm not doing anything.
Over the last 15 years, I mean, the Fed has just created some serious inflation, and you see it, and you retweeted this. I think you reshared it. But checkable deposits and currency held by the top 1%. The chart only goes to the first quarter of 2022. It got so ridiculous, right? This chart gets so ridiculous that they can't update it, right? Because it's probably even more ridiculous.
Right.
Why has the Federal Reserve, stopped updating this series? The checking account deposits and cash of the top 1%. Why? Because it's probably even more ridiculous. We have a $1.2 trillion increase in the amount of checking account deposits and currency held by the top 1% since just before the pandemic. A $1.2 trillion
increase. That's where all the money went, to those people.
Yeah. So that's why the Fed can't publish the series anymore. They can't update it because it's probably $2 trillion now or even
how much,
more.
How much of that, before I outpeep what I'm going to say here, how much of the money do you think has not been spent? Because I don't want to, as much as I'm going to criticize these guys, I don't want to over-criticize them. Because if you look at the amount of money in the state of Illinois, what did everybody end up getting? $3,000, $3,500 in the mail? Yeah. Something like that from the government?
That's nothing compared with the...
that's what I'm saying. I'm saying if you took all that money, and you look in the state of Illinois, and I still have it mirrored in my favorite somewhere, you can go find every speck of money that people got from the PPP stuff. It's all right online. You know, so I think there was...
That stuff's been spent.
What I'm saying is, in Illinois, there's basically, was it 150,000 or 200,000, some incredible number of small businesses got PPP money. So now if you put all that together, the checks plus the PPP, I think it was less than 30% of the total. They popped out. So the question then is, who the bleep got the other 70? I mean, was it United Airlines getting like a couple of $1 billion and laying off pilots anyway when they were supposed to be paying them with it? I mean, I think those guys did whatever they wanted with the money, the big companies.
Yeah, I mean, I think the people that got those stimulus checks, those $3,000 checks, or the PPP loans, that money's been spent because, you know, it was there for a while, but with this inflation, all that savings they had built up from all those checks has been spent. And now the top 1% is sitting on an incredible amount of cash that the Federal Reserve printed in thin air.
There's some people that aren't 1%ers that made out pretty good. If you and I, if we knew
just
this.
Just imagine, though, the top 1% of the 1%. What do you think they're
trying to count? Not even, yeah. You know, that's the weird part. I have a chart here somewhere. I'm going through my stuff here, organizing. There's a chart that talked between the end of World War II was, 45, but when everybody got back here. The chart was between, I think, 48 to, say 75 or something. And they had the five groups, the bottom to 20%, 20 to 40. And for that period of time, virtually every group, maybe the one in the middle, actually did a little better than the rest. But everybody gained whatever the gain was, say 70% or something over that period of time. Virtually every group got the same amount.
Yeah.
And then the next one was from like 1980 to present, and virtually all of it is in the certainly since 2000, virtually all of it is in the top 10%. But the scary part, or the top 20%, scary part there, Hal, almost all of theirs was in the top 5% of the top 20%. So it's not even, it wasn't even for the people in the top 20%.
Yeah. Well, the Fed, people got to realize the Fed is not about helping the poor middle class. It is not about that at all.
But they talk about it.
Yeah, Keynesian fiscal policy, Keynesian fiscal stimulus, and fiscal or monetary stimulus. That those are sold as a way to make the poor and the middle class better off. It does not do that. What it does is it cheapens credit. And so what does a person living at subsistence level or middle income people do when credit's cheap? They go into debt, which is exactly what these people want. They want these people to be consumers. What do the wealthy people do?
Well, you have no, if you're in debt, you have no freedom.
Yeah, you don't have any freedom whatsoever. And so we got to stop thinking of the Fed as a way to, borrowing Biden's words, to build, what does he say, build from the middle out or whatever, down.
Yeah, well, they all say that, but middle class has gotten clobbered by every president in the last six.
If you look at the employment gains since 2017, I think it was, for people born in the United States, there has been no job growth for them at all, none. We're at the same point as we were in 2017. All the job growth, and I am not, you know, close the border, issue passports kind of guy. I'm not that at all. But all the job growth has gone to people who weren't born in the United States. So people who were born in the United States, they've seen no job growth. And in the last year, all the jobs that were added, you know, in the payroll survey, it looks like they're all added as part-time jobs.
Well, some you're correct about that. Some of the issues are, and this is not just people being lazy, don't want to work hard. You know, you can easily fall into
it's policy. It's just stimulus.
But you can fall into that. But I'm saying here in Chicago, it's kind of a real melting pot of this, Hal, and I've mentioned this before. You're starting to get, and I know somewhat about it. I mean, I worked at Pullman, a manufacturing place, and my nephew is in a place now where they're in a metalworking facility where they make parts for people's machines, and they can, you know, blacksmith the parts, and they'll make a conveyor belt for you if you need it, that kind of thing. So they're in the metal servicing industry, for lack of a better term. Now, Chicago used to live on that. Now, when I was young, there were places like Pullman, there were places like Ream Manufacturing, there were all kinds of places that serviced them. And if Pullman didn't want to make this part, you could find five people bidding to slit it, bend it, and punch it for you, and just deliver the parts. Okay, so if you wanted to run a little faster than the machine capacity, there were five guys at your door, you know, giving you a bid and bringing good stuff in. It was all over the place. People actually thought they had a future in those businesses, and all of a sudden they didn't. And oh, by the way, it was pretty hard work. So now here we are 40 years later. You know, partially because of you know, Trump's mandate, and I'm not saying, but I think he was right on this, and partially because, you know, China's kind of falling apart, is we need to get some of these businesses back here, and maybe we should get some of the drugs back here too, which is, you know, maybe even more important. But now you get a situation where my nephew's place can't hire anybody now, and I think it's some people, a lot of kids now, with the thought of them actually working all day in a factory is so, what do you mean? I actually got to lift stuff and do stuff and weld and punch and...
That has something to do with it.
But it also has to do with, if you're not going to say it's just flat-out laziness, which I won't, you're sitting there going, we just did this in this city. People put their hopes and dreams on being working at Pullman the next generation. All of a sudden, they're all gone. So you can't attach your cart to that horse, because in another 10 years, we'll have another president that says, we don't care about China, Korea was made over there, and won't make any of it here. Because you can't build a lifetime now on being a mechanic, because, you know, all of a sudden everyone's going to be electric. You can't look at that forward. And I think a lot of it is that, not just being lazy. That's,
well, part of it is a topic in labor economics. It's this idea that a four-year college education is going to increase your earnings from $45,000 to $65,000. And, you know, people quote that all the time, right? High school counselors will point to that. If you graduate from high school, you're going to make $45,000. If you graduate from college, you'll make $65,000. So it's a no-brainer to go to college. The problem with that is we don't really get to observe ability in that. And ability in terms of how well somebody can do math, how well somebody can do science, right? If you control for ability, the person that's graduating from a STEM program at a university would probably make a lot more money in the private sector had they just graduated from high school as the high school graduate, because they're more able in terms of mathematics. And so what does college really do? Does it really make you better off? Does going to Harvard really improve a really intelligent, smart young person's outlook in terms of employment? No, because they're brilliant and they're going to Harvard because they are brilliant. If they don't go to Harvard, they're going to be a success no matter what. So when you account for ability, this idea that college is going to add $20,000 to your annual salary going forward is a myth. And all these young people have been sold on this idea that the key is college. And I'm a college professor, but I'm a labor economist, and I'm a realist. And college is not for everybody. And we have all these different majors that when you graduate, you basically just wasted 4 years of your life because it's not going to enhance your ability to earn a living.
See, I absolutely couldn't disagree more, with the exception of one thing. At the current price of college, I think you're right.
Well, the current price.
If it's priced properly, yeah. I couldn't disagree more.
But the problem is the current price. Part of that is monetary inflation. Part of it is encouraging everybody to go out and get a college degree, and that increases the demand, which drives the price.
But in my generation. People were, because most, a lot of the parents didn't, they were encouraging the kids to go to college, all right, and mine sure were.
But there were a lot of parents encouraging their kids to get, you know, kids that could fix stuff, right? Kids that could fix stuff, maybe take a vocational program in high school and then become an electrician and a mechanic, right?
That's where I have the same discussion with Kevin and a lot of the guys on the show. I never saw it as an either or. Mm. I never split the two up.
Well, I don't either, because I'm happy solving nine equations in a system or fixing a boiler. I'm equally happy doing both.
See, I would have. I'm of the ilk. Again, I'm showing my age. I'm of the ilk that if my dad, my dad was dead, my stepfather worked. It was at a VP of finance someplace. But if my dad would have owned a fence company. And there are actually a couple guys at Notre Dame that I knew, their dad owns fence companies in a couple of different towns. I still think at the price I went from age 17 to 21, I shouldn't have been hanging around my old man's fence company. I would have been way better off at Notre Dame, meeting people, learning how to act on my own, growing with a bunch of other people around where you have to act differently and you have to learn how to get along with people. And by the way, I was in arts and letters economics, but at Notre Dame, they didn't care if I took 10 business courses, which I did. So I took a full year of accounting. I took marketing. I took taxes. I took all that stuff. And yet I learned I could write a hell of a lot better when I got out of there. So now if I go to the fence company and 2 years later the accountant drops the books on me, I at least know what they were. I mean, there's no question in terms of personal growth. Now, it didn't have to be Notre Dame. It could have been Western Illinois. It could have been Eastern. It could have been anywhere. But in terms of personal growth, from age 17 or 18 to 22, it was a massive bargain at $3,000 a year.
Hey, for individuals like you, Tom, awesome. But my mom would have gotten zero out of college. She's a creative type. She's a singer. She's an artist. She's a piano player. I don't think she could have. I taught algebra, and I could teach algebra to a lot of people, but for some reason, I can't do it with my mom or my brother, one of my brothers. They're just not quantitative. What I'm saying is, you know, people who can fix things, people are really good at figuring out how a car works and how to fix a car or fix this system or run wire. People who are really good at building homes, do they need to go to college? Should we encourage them to go to college?
How do you define it? Even if you're not going to be an accountant, if you're not going to be, whatever you're going to, having a class or two in finance or at least know what stocks are.
Well, I agree 100%.
I just never, when I went to grad school, we got a dash here, but when I went to grad school, and all of a sudden I was the guy at Pullman, okay, the PCW1, I was their finance guy. They had consultants coming in with all these degrees from God knows where, and all the guys in the plant, I was their guys, and they go, you're our guy. He went to the University of Chicago. Don't ever feel intimidated by these guys. You know, they encouraged. I was never intimidated at all. And there was nothing that they brought up. Even today, you brought up a parabola. Well, I'll have to go Google parabola, but at least I've heard of it. You know, at least I know what it is. I can go, because grad school is different than undergrad. It taught you, you weren't expected to know everything, but you knew enough about marketing. You knew enough about this to where, if you had to, you could go, okay, there's where I got to go get this information. You never felt the guy talking in front of you was talking about something you never heard of. You never felt like you didn't belong in the room. And I'm saying, even the guy working for his dad's fence company, at some point, if you get somebody who wants to buy your place, somebody wants to do this, something wants to do that, the fact that you've at least heard of financing, if you have some kind of idea how this is going to affect me tax-wise, or if a marketing plan comes in and you know it's absolutely horse bleep, I don't think any knowledge you get, any teacher I ever had, at some point, well, maybe not philosophy or something, or at least I can remember that, or theology, I took the theology of nonviolence, which I guess I got something out of it. But I don't think I've ever taken a class from a good professor that somewhere, someday, that didn't help me in some small way.
Well, all I'm saying is my brother Ryan, I love him to death. He's a great guy. But him going to a four-year college.
Oh, maybe you don't go to four-year college. My mother used to go at night. She was going at night when she was 75.
Yeah. But him going to a four-year college for 4 years was a complete waste of his time. It didn't enhance his income in the least bit. And now that he's retired from his bullet manufacturing job, he's in our family bookkeeping business. He's making more money with like 10 or 15 clients than he ever did.
Okay, I'm saying
it, but the college had nothing to do with that.
No, but I'm just going to be in this business, whatever it is. For you to think that at some point, if you're going to run the place, that you shouldn't get your behind over to some junior college and learn a basic accounting class, you're crazy.
I'm all about everybody learning and growing, but you know, a 4-year degree is a pretty substantial investment, and some people they're going to make it without it.
Well, the investment's way too big right now. Yeah. I mean, what I encourage everybody to do at $3,000 a year, I'm not going to encourage that person at 70. I mean, we're not even on the same planet.
When I release this video, I'll share it with you on Twitter about the Borjas ability bias model that I'm talking about. I'll share it with you on Twitter.
Okay, we got a dash. But so you know what, Hal? We'll talk about this next week. I think the same thing's happening to hospitals. People, an emergency room visit is so much. You got people going online and doing it themselves. That's scary. That is scary. SP futures up 7. NASDAQ futures up 43. Market looks like it's going up again, especially the NASDAQ. Where do we get the Russell? The Russell's down 8 cents. Go figure. Thanks, Hal. Thanks, Ryan. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
That's all, folks.